political correspondent at The Nation, and author of Horsemen of the Trumpocalypse, a field guide to the most dangerous people in America. Nichols will discuss his new book, The War on Journalism and Its Impact on War and Peace. The talk will be followed by a book signing. That's an evening with John Nichols, a book talk and signing, 6:30 p.m. Wednesday, November 1st at the Highland City Club in Boulder. All proceeds will benefit KGNU. Tickets and more information at kgnu.org.
Welcome to Ragtime America. I'm Jack Rummel. I'll be with you for an hour of recorded ragtime this evening. And tonight we're going to be starting a two-part series on the cakewalk. This is something that we did probably about 8 years ago, and thought it was time to address the subject again, because we talk about the cakewalk a lot, but we don't maybe know too much about how it started, what it is, and or maybe I should say what it was, although it's still being done here and there. It came out of minstrelsy, which derived from hijinks down on the old plantation, presumably on rather benign plantations where field hands and house slaves were allowed to have a role in the celebrations. When white folks weren't looking, the servants put on comic imitations of their lordly ways. The cakewalk mimicked the strut, bobbing back and forth. The masters noticed and appreciated this comedy. To encourage the fun on appropriate occasions, a large decorated cake was donated for the prize to the best dancers. This, of course, led to the saying we still use today, "That takes the cake." Absorbed into minstrelsy, the cakewalk, a grand march with syncopation increasingly added, became the concluding walk-around segment of most of the shows. So we're going to kick things off with the first published cakewalk from 1895. It's called Rastus on Parade, written by Carrie Mills. And tonight we're going to be featuring ensembles for our cakewalks, because even though they were originally written for piano, many of them were converted into ensemble arrangements. So here is the arrangement from the River Raisin Ragtime Review. Thank you. The River Raisin Ragtime Review and Rastus on Parade from 1895. Well, the first big cakewalk hit came 2 years later in 1897. Another piece by Carey Mills. This one, I think, a little more recognizable to our audience. It's called At a Georgia Camp Meeting. And to bring it tonight is the Turpentine Ragsters from the Kansas City area. All right. Turpentine Ragsters there with At a Georgia Camp Meeting. That probably introduced what I would call the true cakewalk rhythm, which you'll hear in most of the rest of the pieces tonight and probably next week as well. It goes like this, da-da-ta-da, da-da-ta-da, that sort of rhythm. And you certainly heard that in the opening strains of At a Georgia Camp Meeting. And you'll probably hear it in this next one as well, which is called Smoky Mokes from 1899, written by Abe Holtzman. And here is a string band group from Arkansas, the Skirtlifters. Thank you. The Skirt Lifters, featuring Clark Buehling on banjo, and Smoky Mokes by Abe Holtzman. You could certainly hear that cakewalk rhythm in the opening strange, which was brought back as the closing strain, too. Da-da-ta-da, da-da-ta-da. So keep listening for that. Here's another one by Abe Holtzman, not as nearly as well known as Smoky Mokes. From 1900, it's called Hunky Dory. And here is the Lake Arrowhead Early Jazz Band from California. The Lake Arrowhead Early Jazz Band and Hunky Dory by Abe Holtzman. That's from an album that they put out simply entitled The Cakewalk, a whole collection full of interesting cakewalks from the beginning of the 20th century. Well, the original quote that we started the whole evening out with came from a book called Ragging It by H. Loring White. And we're going to quote from this book one more time. These jaunty cakewalks suddenly took off during the mid-1890s to become an early pop craze, something audiences couldn't get enough of, both as spectators and as participants. After watching, people couldn't resist trying it at home. Most traveling shows featured it. Soon contests took place, with whites so caught up in the spirit that many put on the burnt cork. Thus, cakewalks impressed on the public first notions of the new musical sensation called ragtime. This march-like dance, less syncopated than the rags that appeared on music counters a year or so later, helped launch Tin Pan Alley into the big time with a selection of hits. The leading composers of these hit tunes were Carrie Mills, which we've heard a couple of, Abe Holtzman, who we've also heard a couple more, and then Jay Boldewald Lampa, who we will hear next on another cakewalk that has endured down through the years to become a very popular tune even today among ragtimers from 1900. Here is Creole Bells, and here is the New York Ragtime Orchestra. A live performance by the New York Ragtime Orchestra, Creole Bells by J. Bodewald Lampa, and you could certainly hear that cakewalk rhythm in the opening strain, which they brought back as the closing strain as well. Well, if you asked the average ragtimer to name a cakewalk, I'll bet you this is the one that they would name. It's very well known and certainly exceedingly popular. It was composed as a collaboration between Scott Joplin and Arthur Marshall in the year 1900. It's called Swipesy Cakewalk, and here is the New England Ragtime Ensemble, directed by Gunther Schuller. New England Ragtime Ensemble and Swipesy Cakewalk by Joplin and Marshall. Well, you've been listening to that cakewalk rhythm in bits and pieces throughout these pieces, selections that we're listening to tonight. But this one from 1901 by Clarence Wiley has cakewalk rhythm throughout. All three sections have cakewalk rhythm, so you should certainly be able to pick it up on this one. It's called Carbolic Acid, an appropriate name considering the composer, Clarence Wiley, was a pharmacist. Here is the Paul Price Society Orchestra. Well, I think the whole piece was built around that one little syncopated da-da-ta-da. Carbolic acid. Paul Price Orchestra there. Well, even the women got involved. Here is Sadie Koninsky's piece from 1898 called Eli Green's Cakewalk, played by the Dawn of the Century Ragtime Orchestra. Written in 1898, before that cakewalk rhythm really became standardized, that was Eli Green's Cakewalk, played by the Dawn of the Century Ragtime Orchestra. Well, here's another string band performance, by the Etc. String Band, of a cakewalk written in 1899 by Arthur Pryor, the great trombonist. It's called Southern Hospitality. The Etc. String Band featuring Dennis Pasch on mandolin and Southern Hospitality by Arthur Pryor. Well, Harry P. Guy, a band leader from Detroit, wrote a piece in 1899 called Cleanin' Up in Georgia, and it is advertised as a cakewalk, march, and two-step, so I guess you can take your pick on that. We're going to count on the fact that there's some cakewalk rhythm in here. Here is a group out of the Pacific Coast Ragtime Orchestra called the Small Timers. Well, there they go, marching off into the distance. Cleaning Up in Georgia by Harry P. Guy. What was the Small Timers there? Well, there's some lesser-known names involved in this. Most of the ones we've played so far are names that will be recognized by a lot of people, names of composers, that is. And here are some that probably won't be. This is C.L. Barnhouse is the composer, and the title of this is spelled out in African-American dialect of the day, which, of course, would not be appropriate today. George Washington's birthday party, party spelled P-A-H-T-Y, so I guess I'm just going to say this is George Washington's Birthday Party by C.L. Barnhouse, and here is the New Columbian Brass Band. New Columbian Brass Band and George Washington's Birthday Party from 1899. George D. Barnard is our next composer here, whom I know nothing about, but in 1899 he wrote a cakewalk called Alabama Dream. And here is the Pacific Coast Ragtime Orchestra. Thank you. Alabama Dream. That was the Pacific Coast Ragtime Orchestra. Well, here's a quote from Peter Gammond from his book Scott Joplin and Ragtime. He says, "Beginning in 1897 and for several years, the name Ragtime was to be inextricably interwoven, mixed, muddled, and substituted for, or by, the word cakewalk. As far as most folks were concerned, they were both two steps for convivial dancing." From 1899, here's a piece called The Cotton Picker's Rag and Cakewalk, written by William Brown and played by the New Leviathan Oriental Foxtrot Orchestra. Cotton Picker's Rag and Cakewalk from 1899. That was the New Leviathan, Oriental Foxtrot Orchestra. From 1900, a piece by Monroe Rosenfeld, another name that I'm not familiar with, called A Tennessee Revival. And here are the Elite Syncopators with Terry Parrish at the piano. Thank you. A Tennessee Revival. Monroe Rosenfeld wrote it, and the Elite Syncopators played it for us. Well, that pretty much brings us to a close. We have one more piece tonight. We're going to go out with that one. But I hope you've had a good time this evening as we've explored the cakewalk. As cakewalks were often arranged for piano, they were customarily performed by marching or circus bands, popularized by John Philip Sousa, for example. But next week, we're going to concentrate on the piano, and so we'll be playing a collection of cakewalks and listening to various piano versions of that. So I hope you'll tune in next week for part two of the cakewalk. It'll be fun bringing it to you, and I hope you'll have a fun time listening. Anyway, here we go out tonight with our last selection. It's called Coon Hollow Capers, written by Frank Gillis in 1899. And here is the Palm Leaf Ragtime Orchestra, conducted by Galen Wilkes. Time in 30 seconds will be exactly 9 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. Stay tuned for Swing Shift.
Good evening, fellow creatures of the night. Join me as my friend Dave Gloss presents music of the swing era in my kind of style. I hope you'll enjoy listening to a collection like Bing Crosby and Louis Armstrong. So now here's my host for this evening, and yours too, my friend David Gloss. Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to Swing Shift. And it's time for our annual Halloween treat. So I hope you'll stay tuned for some marvelous sounds from the swing era. And we're going to commence tonight's broadcast with Bing Crosby.
The ghosts and banshees get together for their nightly jamborees. There's ghosts with horns and saucer eyes, and some with fangs about this size. Some short and fat, some tall and thin. Some don't even bother to wear their skin. Oh, oh, I'm telling you, brother, it's a frightful sight to see what goes on in the night. Jamboree, they break it up with fiendish glee. Ghosts are bad, but the one that's cursed is the headless horseman. He's the worst when he goes a-jogging across the land, holding a noggin in his hand. Demons take one look and groan and hit the road for parts unknown. And there's no wraith like a spooky spurn.
They don't like him and he's really burnt.
He swears to the longest day he's dead, he'll show them that he can get ahead. Unless you're careful, he'll get yours. Don't think he'll hesitate a bit, 'cause he'll clip your top if it'll fit. And he likes them little, likes them big, part in the middle or a wig, black or white or even red. The headless horseman needs a head.
With a hip, hip and a clippity-clop, he's out looking for a top to chop.
So don't stop to figure out a plan.
You can't reason with a headless man.
So after dark, you kids be good. Stay at home the way that you should. 'Cause right outside and waiting there is the headless horseman.
Beware!
And I'm getting out of here.
Crooked nose. He lived in a log hut and he called him Old Man Mose.
Yeah.
Early one morning, I knocked at his door. I didn't hear a single sound